This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie? What is going on in your garden?
Oh my gosh, the sky is blue, the plants are green, the bugs are flying. It's summer in the county.
Yes, indeed. And that rain that we had last week because of Hurricane Beryl, we were discussing it briefly before the show, a welcome dousing for us. I know other areas of the country got it too hard, but yeah. For us, it was quite beneficial.
Oh, yeah. We measure precipitation here with a little gauge, and we measured 50 millimeters on this past Wednesday at our place over the 24 hours. So it was nice and steady. A lot of it obviously got absorbed. I think I've even heard my sump pump running, which is crazy in July. That never happens. So we've clearly got, you know, a good soaking rain here, and plants are happy for it. I'm thrilled to bits. And you're right, there's parts of North America. I was reading about Vermont as an example. They got 150 millimeters while we were getting 50. So yeah, our ditches are pretty wet, but at least they weren't spilling over.
Yeah, and some of our eastern provinces, they got hit pretty bad, and they had a lot of infrastructure damage because of flooding, because of the water. Yeah. Yes, I agree. It was welcome here because it didn't come down too torrentially, and so it really did soak into the ground. And yeah, everything here is very lush and green looking, which is great.
Yeah, good stuff. Do you want to do the numbers? And then I'm going to remind everybody about the latest Urban Nature Store venture.
You got it, yeah. So we would love for you to give us a call if you have a gardening question, indoor, outdoor, comment, that type of thing. Let us know what's going on. 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Now, if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, I have a toll-free number for you to use, which is 1-866-740-4740. Okay, and do let Ashy know if you're a first-time caller, because then I will give you your garden wings. We want you to call often. We want you to call early. And as I say, the lines are open. And please, one question per call. And if you break that rule, I'm going to have to jump in. And I'm going to have to, like a Japanese beetle, I'm going to have to squish it. Okay. I'm going to say, nope, done.
Yeah, that's true. It's, you know, because once people line up on the lines there, it's nice to keep chatting with different voices and different people and hear different things. Remember, we don't just want to hear the worst things that are going on in your garden. Give us a call if you've got something good going on, too. Yeah. Or tips, tricks you're using to, you know, solve some of the issues that you're hearing from others. Just quickly, I want to remind everybody, today is the truly big grand opening of the brand new Urban Nature Store that is located at 1100 Golf Link Road. That's on the Ancaster-Hamilton border. And Paul Oliver, who many of you will remember, very, very engaged, natural, urban sort of a guy who just loves everything to do with nature. He'll be there, obviously, cutting ribbons and doing giveaways and all kinds of great fun stuff. So, you know, get down there if you can. It's certainly going to be worth your time.
Beautiful. Okay, that is a good news story for sure. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show. And just listening to that theme music there, I was, you know, going mentally through my head the list of flowers that that gentleman's singing. And I'm thinking, a lot of them are up now, right? I mean, certain times of the year when we hear that song, none of them are up, but a lot of them are up. And some of them, like the forsythia, have already passed. They're done, you know.
For now. Till next
spring. For now. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the beauty of a well-designed garden is you've got early, you know, early spring, late spring, early summer, late summer, fall, right through to winter, beauty going on. You know, every plant that you put in your garden should give you joy year-round as far as I'm concerned. It's got to bring something to the table besides just, you know, yellow flowers in the spring. It's got to be, you know, something that really, really adds to the garden on many levels if possible.
Indeed. And I agree with you. I love the staggering of the flowers, you know, when some things come up and they go down and others are on their way up. And I do. And I love the weight. Like we have a flowering crab in front of our tree, which I think you know, because you've been by here. And, you know, really, we get a week, maybe 9 or 10 days if we're lucky, but some, you know, and we wait all year for that. But it's worth the wait because it's so stunning when it blooms.
It's pretty dramatic. It's a pretty little crab tree.
Yeah.
And you get crab apples, I imagine, too.
We don't actually off that. Oh. I don't, unless the birds get them all before they hit the ground. But we don't typically get a whole lot of them. So no.
So then some people would like that because crab apples are considered a messy tree when they do drop their crabs. Yeah, indeed. The apples.
Okay, so let's go to our first caller. We have Jean on the line, and she's calling from Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning to both of you. Charlie, you are incredible, as if you didn't know that already. I want to put a plug out to Bradford Greenhouse in Bradford, of course. It is a phenomenal spot. I bought a Hoya, finally. I've been complaining to you for a long time. Beautiful. But the only problem is, I don't know what kind it is. But there were a whole bunch, 20 of them, in the little display thing. And I just picked a nice one. My question, please, is really offbeat. What do I do for hollyhock seeds at the end of the season? I go to this drop-in, and they just got new hollyhocks, and they're beautiful. So is it easier for me to do get the seeds, or should I go and buy a pack?
Well, okay, so naturally, unmessed around with by people in nature, hollyhocks, once the flowers are finished, seeds will form, and the seeds typically will drop to the ground at the base of the current hollyhock plants. The current plants will die because they do die after they flower, but the seeds should germinate, and new little green rosettes of leaves will start to grow. Often I find in Ontario, because our season is long enough, and I think climate change is probably contributing to a longer summer, you have the little green rosette of leaves this summer happen at the base of the hollyhocks as they're dying down. Little green sprouts are coming up around them, and they will then go into winter, go to sleep, come back next spring, and bloom next spring. So we think of them as a perennial plant, but really they're a biennial plant. So the first year, just green leaves, second year, flowers, death starts again. Should you collect seeds from the beautiful hollyhocks? You can, but be like Mother Nature. Scatter them on the ground. Once they are ripe, mature, coming off the current plants, or if you're buying seeds, same thing. Sow them this year. Keep them a little bit moist. Put them in very sunny location with well-drained soil.
But I'm stealing them from the community center.
Do it under cover of darkness.
That's what I fear. But what do I do with them? Like the seeds over winter?
Pardon?
Do I overwinter them in the fridge? Or
No. Put them in the ground this summer. Watch them on the plant. Watch as they mature. The seeds, the little fruits on the hollyhock will mature to dry little husks. Once you see that, have an envelope ready or a little something to put them into, and then take them home and scatter them.
Oh, I like you. Thanks, Charlie. Talk to you later. Bye now.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call there, Gene.
Congratulations on your Hoya plant.
Yeah. I like Hoyas too. I guess there's many different types, are there, Hoyas?
Yeah, well, there's different, all kinds of different speckled leaves. Like there's plain green leaves, and then there's millions of different sort of variegations to the leaves. So, they can be pretty interesting. What's so cool about Hoya is when they flower, they're very fragrant.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. What is the fragrance? Is there something that it's like?
Sweet. Yeah, it's a sweet smell. It's also funny because they produce so much nectar, they like drip. So you make sure you don't have a, you know, expensive Persian carpet beneath your Hoya, because it's going to drip nectar when it's flowering.
I see. Oh, and I just want to mention, we're going to go to break. I'm going to give the numbers out again, but I want to tell you that Gail told me that they saw a hummingbird in the little feeder that you gave me. So, yeah, we saw
Sweet.
One the other day. And, of course, it's all in bloom and the whole bit. So, yeah, I haven't seen one yet, but they are in town. They have come back.
That's good. So there's a little feeder, but then there's the red salvia flowers,
Absolutely.
Which is probably most really odd because the feeder is so tiny. But those red flowers should be quite stunning for the hummingbirds to see.
Indeed. They love
them.
So
great.
I'm very excited about that. Yes, indeed.
Congratulations.
Okay. Numbers again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we're back here on The Garden Show on this 13th of July. Yeah, we're almost in the middle of July already. And, of course, we've been having some nice summery weather. And so things are popping up everywhere. Let's go to our next caller. We have Trish on the line, who is calling from Uxbridge, Ontario. Welcome to The Garden Show, Trish.
Thank you very much.
Morning.
Good morning. So nice to talk to you two.
Yeah.
What is going on in your gardening world there, Trish?
Well, I'm I can't get off my deck because the deer flies attack me.
Oh my.
I just wondered if Charlie might have any solutions.
Well, there's the, you know, full body bug suits. the honey the beekeepers wear.
Yep, I know. I'm considering it.
Yeah, which can be a little bit hot, but can definitely protect you. You know what? I have quite a lot of deer flies at where I am too, particularly on a day when it's not very windy. And they are nefarious little bugs. I mean, they land on you, and if you don't see them, they quickly inject their tranquilizing poison and then take a big chunk out of you and then fly away. And you look down and realize you're bleeding. It's like you didn't even feel any of it. And yeah, it hurts for days and days for me when it happens.
Yeah.
I have been very consistently using an insecticide with DEET in it product before I go out. And I just put it on any exposed skin. And, you know, I have wear a hat when I'm out and I spray my hat and hope for the best.
I've been watching online videos and they put these blue hats on and cover them with this thing called Tanglefoot.
Sticky stuff.
And the deer foot stick to them.
Yuck. And then you go to adjust your hat and your fingers are stuck to your hat and then you take it off and look at it and it's covered in flies. It's like, oh no.
Pretty glamorous.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if they do land on you and you see them, they're pretty easy to kill. They're not that fast moving, but you won't hear them. And they really do take a chunk. So the insecticide or a physical barrier, that's really my best suggestions, or wind. Because most of the biting insects, mosquitoes particularly, are what we call weak flyers. So they can't land on you, even if you've got a fan blowing on you, sitting out on your porch or deck, just a slow moving fan or a light breeze, and the mosquitoes will be there, but they won't be able to land.
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
Good luck with that. Oh, Trish.
The only thing.
Sorry.
Yeah. The only saving grace is that
I don't think I gave you your garden wings, did I?
Oh, garden wings. Nope.
Yeah. Because you're a first time caller, so I'm going to. There you go. I want to make sure I give you those.
Don't be a stranger.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Trish. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Sharon, who's calling from Gravenhurst. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sharon.
Good morning. I recently purchased a Venus flytrap. My intent was to keep it in the house, and if any insects got in, it would take care of them.
Chase them around.
I then read up on the care, and my goodness, what a needy plant. It's supposed to have distilled water or rainwater. It can go for about 3 months without any food, shall we say. After that, it recommends purchasing mealworms or crickets. This will not be happening, and I think it's going to be a very undernourished plant unless you have any alternative suggestions.
Oh, dear. Yes, there is no... Well, I like the way you call it a needy plant. It is a plant with very specific requirements. There's no question. So if you can just turn wherever you've got it, whatever room in your house you've placed the Venus flytrap, just turn it into an Amazonian rainforest and you'll be fine. It just needs that high humidity and the warmth and the buzzing of insect life. Not a bad idea to consider putting it outside, obviously not into sun. It would have to be in a sheltered, bright location where it's going to get the dew and the rain and the odd insect flying through. And then if it doesn't eat all winter, it'll probably be okay. I remember when I was a teenager getting a Venus flytrap and then taking a little piece of hamburger and trying to feed that to it. It doesn't work. You need the live insect. And they're fascinating if you can keep them alive and watch them. You never know. You might catch a fly at your place and be able to just grab it by the wing and then bring it over and just drop it on the leaf, and the leaf should snap shut and it'll suck the juices out of that fly.
Oh, my goodness. I do put it out sometimes, like if to get some rainwater, but unfortunately I have full sun all day on my deck. And okay. I do have in a southern window when I bring it in. And now it's in a very tiny, about a 2.5-inch pot. If it survives, should I put it in a larger pot if to get it to, I don't even know if I want it to grow larger.
Keep an eye. The little tiny 2.5-inch pot has drainage holes, and I believe it's planted into moss, right? Like a sphag moss?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So just keep an eye on the drainage holes. Of course, you're going to keep that moss moist. And, you know, nothing wrong with collecting some rainwater if you can, and just using that to spritz the moss or to dip the moss into, you know, the whole pot into, to keep the moisture level fairly high, humidity high around the plant. You probably won't need to repot it. But if you did, you'll just do the same thing that it's planted into a slightly larger, like 4-inch pot.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it, as always. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Bye. You too.
Thanks very much. A needy plant. I love that. We should introduce Sharon to Trish, and maybe it'll eat all the deer flies.
Yeah, there you go. Put them exactly. Sharon should go visit Trish in Uxbridge and take her Venus flytrap on her visit.
Now, I have a question about the Venus flytrap. We had one or two, I guess, as I was growing up, because they are a bit of a, they're a bit of a novelty plant, you know.
Totally, yeah.
You know, Mike, I can't remember, when the bug lands in there, does it have something sticky that sort of holds them there till it closes, or does it just close quick enough that it traps them that fast? Because flies are quick.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple things going on in the Venus flytrap. I'd have to look up to be absolutely sure. But if a healthy Venus flytrap, inside that little claw-like leaf, it's kind of a rosy red right in the center if it's a healthy, happy plant. And the flies are attracted to that color, but they're also, there's likely some kind of chemical scent going on there as well that attracts the flies. I think it probably looks like, you know, dead meat to the fly, that redness. There are many plants do smart things like the smell of rotting meat to attract the flies. And once it lands, I don't believe there's anything sticky on the Venus flytrap. There's many plants that use stickiness, but Venus flytraps will actually close quite quickly. And there's those little claws, like little lobster claws.
Right. Okay. Fascinating. Very, very fascinating. Our number's to call 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We are going to Toronto now. We have Lisa on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Lisa.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call. Love your show. I'm calling about sweet William. So I picked up two sweet William plants probably 3.5 weeks ago from a big box store, and they were beautiful. Put them in the garden, and I've been deadheading them, but they're not looking so good right now. There's maybe, I don't know, between the two plants, about 6 purple buds on them, and the rest kind of looks dead, but the leaves are green. So what am I doing?
Oh, so the leaves look good?
Yeah, the leaves look fine.
Oh, okay. So, and I imagine did you put it into a full of really sunny 6 hours of sun kind of location?
Yes, it gets sun from about 11 o'clock in the morning until about 4 o'clock in the afternoonish.
Okay. So maybe the rain has done something, because it does not, Sweet William is a form of dianthus, okay. Being carnations and that, all those sort of plants. And it is something that they can be a little tricky to grow depending on the kind of soil you have. If you're in, so you are in Toronto, are you in sandy soil or clay soil?
I'm not really sure it's clay, too. I mean, and right beside it, I've got huge daisies that are blooming beautiful, black-eyed Susans that are doing beautifully. I've got a bee balm that's doing beautifully, so I'm not sure.
Oh, that's all good. all right. So your Sweet William should do fine. You know what? I think for now, just don't be overly concerned with flowers. You know, it's when you first plant plants, we always want the plant to concentrate on roots as its number one priority to establish itself in your garden. And then in the future, either this year season or even maybe next season, it will come into its own as a as an ornamental plant. But for now, it's more about getting those roots down and getting the plant settled into its current location.
Okay. And deadheading, I just take the little tiny brown bits off.
Yep, get out those manicure scissors.
Okay, thank you, you know, very they're much.
Yeah, exactly. And you will find that deadheading will promote more flowers. So certainly it's a good idea if you can do that.
Okay, yeah I'm a big deadheader of everything.
Oh, good. That's why you've got so much blooming, obviously.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks very much there, Lisa. And good luck with that. Sweet Williams, indeed. Mm. Is that a flower you've grown much in your day or no?
I have, but not very successfully in Richmond Hill because the soil was so heavy. A heavy clay soil does not support dianthus plants in general. Beautiful scent, though. That's why they're called Sweet William.
Right, yeah.
And you get some of the other dianthus that you get these sort of clove scents and all these really lovely fragrance. And I love fragrant plants, but I haven't even tried growing it here. It's not a long-lived perennial. It's not like, you know, peonies, you plant it once, and then 150 years later, it's still there. It's more like a delphinium that lasts for 4 or 5 years, and then it just shrivels up and disappears.
Okay. Is that because of us trying to plant it here, not where it's indigenous to, or is it just that's the way it would be everywhere?
Yeah, I think that's the way it would be anywhere. Okay. It is what we consider a short-lived perennial.
Gotcha. Okay, let's go to our next caller, Anne. Anne is calling from Georgetown. Welcome to the Garden Show, Anne.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I have an eastern redbud plant or tree, and I like to know how I really take care of it. It's about 15 inches tall, and it's not even a half an inch wide. It's very skinny little trunk.
Huh. So where did you get it?
My granddaughter gave it to me. I don't know where she got it.
I wonder if she did she dig it up from somewhere? Because they do come up from seeds.
Oh, they do come from seed? No, she got it from Amazon or somewhere. I couldn't tell you where she got it. She didn't tell me.
Wow. Okay. So it's a neat, it will it will grow into a big plant. So make sure you've got a spot to plant it. Excuse me, I'm just choking.
You okay there?
No, what did you say?
Jeez.
Hello?
I'm choking. It's
sorry,
okay.
She was choking.
I was just coughing. So, Anne, native tree. It wants to grow into a plant that is about 15 feet tall and about 15 feet wide.
Right.
So if you're planting it in your yard, plant it in a situation where it can get to that size. For now, in the little tiny pot, maybe keep it in the pot. Keep it out on your deck or patio. Allow it to, you know, water as necessary. Allow it to, you know, get used to the sun and the shade. This is a plant that can grow in either sun or shade. Excuse me.
I put it
and then
in the
over
sun.
Winter, you may have to keep it in that little pot and just bury it for the winter in your garden.
Well, I was thinking about keeping it inside. Would it die?
Okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to just go to a break quickly. We'll just stay on the line. We're just going to go to a break quickly. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And, you know, that's what happens when you suck back a deer fly, eh? There you go.
Thanks for that. Or maybe it was a Japanese beetle.
Maybe it was a Japanese beetle. I have had that happen before where you just get that tiniest little bit of spittle in your throat and you just need a moment to clear that out. Yes,
that's
indeed.
For sure. So okay. Just to finish quickly with the question, Anne and her tiny little redbud tree, do not keep that in the house. That is not a house plant. That is an outdoor hardy what will be a tree. So keep it in the pot for now. Plant it in its permanent location if you can. And if you can't, because it's too small and it's going to get run over by a lawnmower or whatever, keep it in its pot. But for the winter, that pot must go underground. If it's not in its permanent location, the pot gets buried in the garden somewhere, dug up in the spring, grow it up big enough that you can get it into its permanent location. Lovely, lovely native plant. Beautiful flowers in the spring.
Okie dokie. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have John on the line from Mississauga. Welcome.
Good morning,
to the show, John.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
I have a comment, Charlie, regarding the, what you call again, please? Oh, the dog. Come on. Oh, my God, Charlie, I lost it.
Of course, is it the boxwood? You want to talk about the boxwood?
The boxwood, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. You know, a little while ago you said, Charlie, there was a big problem, right? And
yes.
I have three of them, which, actually two of them are 4 feet wide. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so what I did is I really gave them a good power wash.
Okay.
And I fertilized.
Okay.
And it seems like they're coming, I mean, they're green now, actually. Mm-hmm. Do you think they cannot survive?
Well, the thing about the boxwood tree moth is that it has more than one generation every season. So if you're feeling pretty clean and clear right now, that's great. And it is possible with absolute vigilant inspection every single day to help them survive. But the trick is that if more of the little caterpillars hatch on your boxwood, they will proceed to defoliate the plants very quickly. So don't be going on holidays. You've got to every morning go and check each plant.
Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, because how to call it? I was going to take them off. My wife said, and they're in the front of my house, so it would be, I need something, if I replace them, I would have need something more or less similar in size, which is going to be a big
problem. Which is a pretty good sized plant,
You know, but the thing will survive, Charlie, or I have to watch, like you said, every day.
Every day, watch every day. And of course, you won't have to watch in the winter, but do watch every day. Just take a look at them. The BTK, that spray, which is a bacterial spray, can be very effective.
BTK?
As soon as you see, sorry?
BTK.
Yes.
Yeah.
BTK is a very effective spray. It's a bacteria that you spray on the plants when you see even one little caterpillar. Spray the plants immediately as per instructions on the package, and the little caterpillars, as they chew the foliage, will be eating the bacteria, which will ultimately kill the larva. But it won't be a quick fix, because more will fly in from your neighbors and all around you. So it will be a long-term maintenance issue.
Okay there, John.
Can you repeat what it is, Charlie, please? HTK? Is it HTK?
B as in Bob.
Oh, okay, BTK.
As in Tom.
Yeah.
K as in kite.
Yeah. Okay. And thanks for your email response too, Charlie. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. Take care. Thanks, Dean.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
So, Dean, do you want to tell everybody what email he was referring to? Because I feel
absolutely. You read my mind. Yeah, so if you've got, some problems that you might have, or as Charlie was saying, some successes that you want to share are sometimes easier with a picture. You know, a picture is 1,000 words. And so if you would like to do that, Charlie's email is c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. And that email, you know, you can send that any time of the night or day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. You're good. Okay. And there
Thanks,
you go.
Thanks, Dean. Yeah, I never sleep.
Anytime.
I'm always at my
computer.
Don't hesitate. But John wondered about Rose of Sharon seedlings. That was the thing that he was questioning, and I'm sure other people have the same problem. Beautiful Rose of Sharon, and then before you know it, a forest. So he was concerned about how many were coming up. And I think the bottom line is, as soon as they're finished flowering, get pruning so they don't set the seeds. That's the real bottom line. Flower late summer, enjoy the flowers. By October, give your Rose of Sharon a haircut if seedlings are a problem.
Okie dokie. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Evelyn on the line. She's also a Toronto caller. Welcome to the Garden Show, Evelyn.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just had a question about Katsura tree that we planted last year. It's south facing on our property, and it seems to be shedding some leaves. Not the majority, thank goodness, but some of the leaves are falling. And I was wondering what the cause of that would be, or if there is a concern, and we should get back to the people that we bought it from.
Yeah, no. Okay, so Katsura is the common name, Katsura. Lovely tree, not native to North America. It's originally from Asia. What I love about Katsura is that it really doesn't have any pests or diseases. Like, nothing eats the Katsura. The gypsy moths didn't eat it. The Japanese beetles don't eat it. Like, it's a great tree for being free of diseases and free of pests. However, it does love its water. It is not so much a water hog, but it, particularly since you only planted it last year and we had some very hot, dry weather, the yellow leaves that you're seeing now are likely on the inside of the tree. So they're the older leaves, not the tips. So the older leaves are starting to yellow up a bit. And that's just showing you that the tree was suffering from lack of water 2 weeks ago. So you are going to have to stay on top of consistently not soaking the tree every day, but ensuring that the tree gets a minimum of roughly an inch of water every week, just roughly. So if we don't get rain, if we don't get that, you know, 25 millimeters of rain every week, then you must get your sprinkler out and you must put a sprinkler on that tree. And you're going to have to do that for the next 5 to 10 years. But you'll also get used to the fact that it's got millions of leaves. If a few turn yellow early in the season, we call that early defoliation. It's telling you that it's under a little bit of stress, but it's by no means dying. It's just dropping some leaves early.
Oh, okay. You know what? I think I am guilty of not having watered it through that dry spell. So
It's okay. It happens. I'm looking right outside my window right now, and I have a 4-year-old Katsura that is all yellow in the middle because I didn't water mine either. But it's all green on the outside, but yellow on the inside. So it's a great tree in the fall because it turns apricot colored. But if it loses too many leaves due to lack of water, then we won't get that great fall color.
I see. Well, thank you so much, Charlie. It was a great replacement. We had a birch tree for the past 40 years there, and it died. So this has been it's smaller. I miss the shade, but it's lovely. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a fast growing tree. It'll grow about a meter a year once it's really settled into your garden. So it's going to fill in where that birch was in a few years. Don't worry.
Okay. Because it's
thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much for the call there, Evelyn. Charlie, quick question. Is a katsura anything like a willow? I mean, I know from when I was a child that willow, because they're also water loving, can like go break into pipes and things like that in people's houses.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's not like a willow at all. Okay. And a willow, you're right, requires tons of water. Katsura, not as much as a willow. And when I say grows up to a meter a year, that's pretty fast growth for a tree. A willow can grow like up to 2 meters a year. Like, it, again, loving all that water. Wow. Have you ever, when you were a boy or when you were out playing, did you ever take a willow branch and stick it in the ground and walk away and come back 10 years later and there was a big tree there?
No, I actually haven't done, but I had a friend, it's always been one of my favorite trees. Yeah. I had a friend who had one in his front yard. But they took it down because it was actually invading the pipes. It was breaking through some of the pipes going into the house.
That's right. Yeah, no, it is. It can be a real problem that way. Many, very fibrous rooted. Like willows have this massive roots. Cedars are the same. Just a network of roots that end up blocking things like pipes.
Okay, so katsura will not do that.
No, it will not. Excellent. Better not.
I'm intrigued by the apricot color that you talk about in the fall.
So
that sounds
pretty.
Really nice.
It's so pretty, yeah.
Indeed. Okay, we're going to take our next break, but we'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we are back, and we have a few callers on the line, and we have about 8 minutes left, so let's get right to it. Mary is calling from Acton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Mary.
Oh, thank you. Good morning to both of you. Love your show. I have a Madagascar plant. It's about 8 feet tall, and it blooms tiny flowers all year long, and I want to take a cutting, and I was just wondering, like, when I did cut a stem, like some milk came out. I don't know, do I have to dry it out before I plant it, or, and is there a special soil? I have it in potting soil right now.
Okay, so that's a good question. I Madagascar plant. I have never grown this plant. However, based on what you said, so when you say you took a cutting, did you take a leaf? What did you take?
I cut it from the stem, from the ground.
Oh, so it had little suckers coming up from the base? Like it's an actual single tree, right? Single stem tree?
Yes, a little stem, right.
And then a little green sprout came from the bottom.
Yes, it's got, and it's blooming. Like, as soon as they pop out of the ground, they have a flower coming out.
Wow, nice.
It's very pretty.
Okay, so it sounds like what's come from the base would be what we call a sucker. So it's a little daughter plant growing off the mother plant. And if you've cut or broken it away from the main stem, and you obviously saw that white latex dribbling out of the stem, what I would do is I would take a piece of newspaper or, you know, old magazine, whatever, cardboard box, lay that sucker or that little tiny green sprout on its side on the newspaper, put it in a sunny window ledge and or just a window ledge anywhere, and let it sit there for up to 7 to 10 days. Even longer, maybe, because as that little sprout is lying there, the latex will stop running. It will dry up. It will seal over. So it's like a scab. It will scab over. And if it sits there long enough, roots, believe it or not, they won't look like roots to you. But if you watch it, little white growth will start on that cut tip, and it'll look a little bit, we'll call it callus, but it's actually it's tissue that will become roots. It won't be roots to start, but it will become roots. Do not put it into water or soil right away. You're likely to just rot that little plant.
Okay, so after like 7 to 10 days I put it in soil.
I would leave it. It might be 10 days. It might be 2 months for all I know. It kind of would depend on how sort of vigorous. But a little plant like that, I would expect at this time of year, within 2 weeks anyway, you should start to see that tissue I was talking about, that little white tissue, what's called undifferentiated tissue. At that point, you could put it into get some potting soil or cactus soil, better yet. And if it's just regular potting mix, get some sand and mix that. You want a really, really well-drained media. You want a little tiny clay pot, and then you're going to use maybe toothpicks to stick that little plant in just under the surface of the soil. You're going to stabilize it with some toothpicks or something like that, and put it in that window ledge and just let it be, and it will grow roots eventually. Actually, just sitting on your window ledge, it should grow roots as well, just lying on that newspaper eventually.
How often should I water it?
Only when they're very dry. So let it dry down, and once the soil is dry, how often do you water your big one?
About every 10 days or so.
Yeah, I think you'll find in the small pot, you'll probably water a little more often, but better to underwater than overwater.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's very informative. I appreciate it. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thanks for calling.
So much for,
good
thanks
luck.
So much for the call.
Interesting-looking plant.
Yeah,
did you,
it does sound
did you
fascinating.
Look it up? Madagascar.
I did when you were talking about it. It does sound very fascinating. Wow. Yeah. Okay, let's go to our next call. We have Jean on the line from New Market. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning again.
Charlie,
first I want to add about hummingbirds. We have a farm up in Oromadonte, along with our place in Newmarket, and I've been feeding hummingbirds for years because that's something I could easily do, and they've been at that feeder for about 6 weeks already.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's my success.
Well, I love them. I love watching them. It's so fascinating.
They've been longer than that at my place because they got here early this year. Early May, I'm pretty sure. By the middle of May, we had hummingbirds. And it's cute because they're on a clock. I don't know how they tell time, but, obviously by the sun. Between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. at my house, it's hummingbird feeding time at the feeder. And it's just busy, busy, busy. They're just... not a lot of action during the day, but always as the sun goes down.
Wow, I need to watch more carefully.
Yeah, well, you're not retired.
No, well, that's it. That's the problem.
I'm only semi-retired, but still.
Yeah. Jean, did you have a question that you wanted to ask?
Yes, please. It's about my Hoya. I bought it, and it had a 2-inch pot, and it was very healthy. And I let it grow for a couple of weeks, and I thought, I got to make it bigger. I put it in a 4-inch pot. Now it's deciding to flop over. I know it wants to trail, and I don't have anything to put it on. I'm thinking of putting it in the small pot in the bigger pot, and then put the trellis in the bigger pot and train it to go to that. Am I right or not?
You could. You went from the 2-inch to the 4-inch, so you're not seeing any roots coming out the bottom of the 4-inch pot, obviously, yet.
Oh, no.
It'll take a couple of years. Did you put in a clay pot by any chance, or was it plastic?
Oh, it's clay. Dollar store special.
Yeah, good. Well, a 4-inch pot is a good choice for a 4-inch clay pot is a good choice with Hoya because they do like that well-drained soil. And, of course, clay not only allows moisture to evaporate from the surface of the soil, but also from the surface of the pot. So it helps to really keep the plant in, a well-drained, fairly dry situation. So you're wondering if you took that 4-inch pot and you just sat it. You're not talking about putting soil around it into a bigger pot?
No, because I figure it's in a 4-inch from a 2-inch. I just wanted something to put the trellis on. And I thought in the bigger pot empty, I could tape the trellis and then it would trail
it could
from
work.
That.
It could work. I mean, if you want to train it up, sometimes I've seen people grow Hoya from almost like a hanging basket. I've also seen it grown like on a shelf where the plant just kind of trail, you know, goes across the shelf and then down the shelf. So you're right. It is ultimately a vining, hanging plant. So if you're going to train it up, then yeah, I mean, just stabilize the trellis into the larger pot, but do not put soil around your, like the clay pot that's inside the bigger pot. Allow that air circulation. And remember, you are going to water even less if it's down inside sort of a cash pot like that.
Thank you. It's ceramic glazed, though. Should I switch it over to a regular clay?
Yeah, so ceramic glaze would be similar to plastic. Again, you wouldn't have that opportunity for evaporation. Up to you. Again, if it was in plastic or a ceramic glazed pot, you're going to water that much less. But I hope that the 4-inch pot you chose does have drainage holes.
Okay, sorry, Gene, we got to run. We have run out of runway, Charlie. You got to say your goodbyes.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Yeah. Oh,
I was having so much fun. I wasn't watching the time
at all.
Thanks, Dean. Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Ashu. And thanks to all the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.